The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 3 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 6th of August, 2026. And you're very welcome along to another edition of The Greg Hughes Show. It's great to have you on board. And we've got lots and lots to talk about on the show today. Maybe many of you want to talk about the traffic chaos that engulfed Letterkenny yesterday. What was going on? Well, people don't know. They don't know the answers. We don't know. We don't know the answers either. I know there was a road traffic collision a little earlier in the day, but that doesn't explain what went on for the rest of the day. Maybe you have an insight into that. Let us know. I know a lot of people were looking for us to redo that experiment that we did, but please, just to be fair, that was done in the context of the conversation that week when it was said that you couldn't get through Letterkenny, and we just said randomly the next day, well, let's try. I know it's not necessarily going to be representative of all the time, but something happened yesterday. Was it a one-off, or is it a sign of things to come? Let us know that and anything else you want to talk about on our contact numbers, which are as follows: 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number. You can send your voice notes to the WhatsApp there. 07491 25000 if you wish to give us a call, or you can email comments at highlandradio.com. And as always, you can watch this program if that suits you. You can watch at home or on the go on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across Facebook and on the X platform as well. We'll have a run through the papers. We'll start with the Donegal News. We were talking about the traffic and what might relieve the traffic. Well, it's all about the 10T, isn't it? That might help. But it's not going to be plain sailing, because hundreds of people have opposed the €1 billion Euro 10T road project, with objections covering a plethora of deep concerns. Over 200 families, farmers, businesses, engineers and solicitors from various areas such as Letterkenny, Stranorlar, Ballybofey and Lifford, but also Tipperary, Wexford, Roscommon and Longford, have responded to the historic road scheme, which is the biggest and most expensive ever in the county. Some claim that their land is being subjected to compulsory purchase orders, even though the route of the major road construction is not mapped for the parcels of land that have been ring-fenced for the Donegal 10T priority route improvement project. Sisters for landowners, like farmers, have warned that their livelihoods are at stake, because they claim the land take is grossly excessive and will ruinously reduce their stock and business. And there's a list of the further objections contained within. So that is to be expected, I presume, with an infrastructural project such as this. Will it delay the project? I presume that's been factored in. They wouldn't have been so naive to believe there would be no objections, I'm sure. But we shall see. But as I say, that probably is the ultimate solution to gridlock in Ballybofey, Stranorlar, Letterkenny, etc. The Tyrconnell Tribune: as the debate continues about the next generation in farming, Malcolm Thompson, chair of ICSA in Donegal, has said the cap cuts will stop them from farming in this country because it will no longer be viable. He's warned younger people have many other well-paying choices, and insofar as family life is concerned, who wants the drudgery and the low-paying conditions that have been at the heart of life on the farm for generations? He's not selling it to me, I'm not going to lie to you. Is there any scenario, is there any money that would make that description tolerable, I wonder? I'm not quite sure. He goes on: if the government and EU want a new generation of farmers to return and remain on the land, then they have to ensure the current generation has a future that is sustainable and pays them for their labours. But as I say, the job description there doesn't sound very exciting. Front of the Irish Times. We've talked about tradwives in the past on this programme. It was a big thing in America. It seems to have fallen off a little bit, but still it is a factor over there. So that's where a woman lives her life as a very traditional wife, where she's there effectively to care for the home, care for the husband, care for the children. She looks after everything so he can be happy and go out to work, is kind of the way it is now. That family structure, not quite as I described, works for many people. There's no shame in that. And some people, and there's going to be traditional husbands, are very happy. And that's up to each and individual couple. But tradwife influencers and other online trends seen as pressuring women into particular care roles are to be challenged as part of a government-funded awareness campaign. Is this a good use of government money? Have you felt if you're online, your children are online, have you felt pressured into becoming a traditional wife? Because the government is spending money to offset that. A new national strategy for women and girls warns about the misogyny of the manosphere and tradwife influencers who promote restrictive stereotypical roles for women and girls. Now, this could be counterintuitive because I'll be interested to see how the advertisements are framed. I think it's very important that men and women live the life as they choose. And, you know, the way life has been set up at the moment, it's very hard for a woman, if she were to choose to dedicate her life, not dedicate her life, but to live at home, maybe raise the children, be their carers, and the husband goes out and works, or vice versa, whichever way, or if it's a same-sex couple, you can figure it out yourself. So as long as the government doesn't sort of start pressuring women to feel that they have to be out working, if that makes sense, that there'd be less of a woman if they didn't. So I'll be very interested to see how they word it and phrase that, because I think it's very important for women and girls and fellas to, if they can, live the life that makes them happy, free from pressures from either influencers or the state, for that matter. You know, I don't think there should be this necessarily a counter-argument that you must go out and work, you must contribute in one way or other, because we've got all different ways of contributing. We shall see. Right, now, the amount of people that have said to me when they've heard the news, not necessarily our news, but the national news, and go, about the weather, and go, well, it wasn't, though. It was wrong. Nothing's changed here in Donegal. But anyway, I'll get to that in a second. Last month, around the country, not in Donegal, last month was the second hottest July on record since since 1900, in fact, and the third hottest month ever, according to the latest Mediterranean climate statement published today. The mean nationwide temperature was 17.25 Celsius last month. The only greater mean July temperature was in 2013, when it came in at 17.43 Celsius and very little rain. But that was not our lived experience. Let me go through the Donegal figures for you. So we actually here in Donegal had the lowest mean temperature in Ireland. So whilst it was 17.4 odd nationwide, it was 15.1 here, according to the Malin Head station. So much lower than the rest of the country. Still above average, though. Despite being the nation's coolest spot, the temperature up here was still 0.7 above the long-term average, which, as far as I would say, is statistically the same. In terms of sunshine, we had the lowest monthly average. Donegal saw more cloud cover than southern and eastern regions, with Malin Head averaging 4.31 hours of sunshine per day, the lowest mean figure recorded across Met Aaron's nationwide station network. Single day high. In contrast to its overall monthly cloudiness, Malin Head recorded the highest amount of sunshine in a single day anywhere in Ireland. That was on Tuesday, July 14th, 15.8 hours of sunshine that day, with the highest rainfall, as you can imagine, while southern areas suffered extreme drought, some stations receiving as little as 1% of normal rainfall. Malin Head received 61.5 millimetres of rain, which is 72% of the normal July average. So a drier July, but certainly not as dry as elsewhere in the country. And we had the most rain days up here, 17 rain days over the course of July. That is, of course, the highest count of any station in the country. And what about wind? Malin Head registered the country's highest monthly mean wind speed, 13 knots, 24.1 kilometres per hour. And we were the only station in Ireland to report gale force winds during July. So we do stand out. And when you're reading the national newspapers, please understand it's not tailored specifically for you, because our July was very different to July's elsewhere in the country. Donald Trump was facing humiliation last night after Iran secured a deal with Oman to police the Strait of Hormuz. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. This has been a disastrous incursion by both he and the Israelis, not least the loss of life, not least the bombing of a school and the death of innocent civilians, whatever you think of the Iranian regime. But it was all but what he's achieved from this war is nothing. He's achieved nothing. So that loss of life and all of that was pointless, because He has now gifted, effectively, control of the Strait of Hormuz to the Iranians. He is now going to be releasing, lifting sanctions against the Iranians that were in place before the war. He's now going to be contributing to the rebuilding of Iran that he's after bombing. This is from a president who the Americans voted for, not least because he said we won't get involved in any long drawn out foreign wars. But the Iranians have all the cards, to use an old phrase of Donald Trump. So after 5 months of regional conflict, the prospective deal paves the way for Iran to deny access to Western ships along the key route, while the proposal excludes tolls or service fees being levied against shipping, such a prospect remains a major fear for oil producers. The arrangement leaves Donald Trump facing a political backlash at home and abroad as the US finds itself in a weaker position than before the conflict began. And that is indisputable. The US is in a weaker position. Let's go to the Irish Farmers Journal. You know, I'm a meat eater, and so I'm a complete hypocrite in what I'm going to say. The thought then of live exports of animals, it seems cruel to me. But what else do you do? I suppose it has to be done. And we export an awful lot of calves and other animals abroad. I prefer to not to think of them corralled in there. Some calves taken away from their mothers before they've even been weaned and put into a crate and shipped off. But they're going then to be killed and to the food chain, and I'm in that food chain, so I have to check myself, if the truth be told. I can't cherry pick it. I can't be an a la carte meat eater, can I? But anyway, it's getting more complicated for our farmers in this country to export live animals because Brittany Ferries' decision to halt the carrying of live animals from next month has been met with considerable surprise and disappointment by cattle and calf exporters. Shippers have warned that curtailed capacity combined with journey time constraints pose major hurdles to continued levels of export activity. Brittany Ferries' move leaves Irish Ferries as the sole roll-on, roll-off carrier of Irish livestock to the continent, and to stop to animal transport. And it stopped animal transport comes less than 1 year after the company had helped backfill the capacity issues. Now, they have been under an awful lot of pressure from animal rights activists, and they've decided, obviously, the money's not worth the bad press. So that leaves just Irish Ferries. But as I say, I'm not going to take a stand on it because I can't be a hypocrite. You know, I had chicken yesterday for dinner. On to the Irish Daily Mirror now, and murdered Irish woman, Donegal woman, Danielle McLaughlin's mum, has said she's hopeful her daughter's rapist and killer won't win his sentencing appeal, which has now been set for next month. And this was always going to happen, and they went in with their eyes wide open, knowing that even if a conviction was achieved, there would be an appeal, but it just prolongs it over and over, more and more. Vikat Bhagat's appeal against his rigorous life sentence was before the court in India on July 2nd. However, those proceedings were adjourned at the end of July. The High Court of Bombay at Goa allocated a new date of September 9th for the appeal to be heard. Now, whilst they might know that his appeal may well be unsuccessful, it's just another date. It's not more time that you have to kill until such time as you get an answer, and then you can move forward knowing what the situation is. Well, there you go. Do you read the labels on booze? Apparently, they have warnings about alcohol on them. But a quarter of Irish consumers said they were put off buying booze after seeing new labels on products highlighting the association between alcohol and cancer. The results came from a new study assessing the early exposure to and perceptions of the warning labels. So a quarter of people who looked at them are put off by them. So I'm sure lots of people are not looking at them, but I haven't actually seen them. But then again, I don't really see the alcohol. I don't really see the alcohol in its original container. So there you go. Anyway, has it put you off, up or down, left or right? Let's go now to Damien McDermott, senior engineer in the roads office with Donegal County Council. And Damien, whilst you, I believe, are away and can't comment directly, I think yesterday the gridlock that people experienced in Letterkenny brought home the reality that, you know, the the silver bullet, so to speak, is the TEN-T project, not just for Letterkenny, of course, the Finn Valley as well, but it's critically important, no doubt.
Yes, how are you doing, Greg? Good morning. Absolutely. You know, it is a critical piece of infrastructure, without a doubt. The progress on the scheme is I suppose, as follows. Submissions are now back from the public as part of the planning process. Those submissions go into Commission Pinola. They compile the submissions. They start putting them up on their website. And I believe a good few of them are up there now at the moment. But ultimately, they'll send them all to us with their own queries and their own requests for information, and we'll have to respond to that. So that's the next part of the process. So at the moment, we expect there to be in excess of 150, maybe 200 submissions on the project. Now, we don't know if they're good or bad. Generally, I think looking at some of them that are in there, I think they're generally in line with what we'd expect, you know, people sort of concerned about land holding, et cetera, et cetera. So nothing very significant at this time. However, we haven't seen them all. So the process will be now that on Commission Pinola will send us the submissions plus any queries they have themselves as part of the plan process. We will respond to that. Probably we would get probably a month and a half to respond to that, because, as I said, the volume of submissions is fairly large. And then it goes back to them, and then they'll decide then, based on all that, whether or not we have an oral hearing. Now, the oral hearing, we would expect, we would hope, would be before the end of the year, but we don't know about that yet.
We're not going to speak about any specific submissions, clearly, but say somebody does submit along the lines of that, you know, there's not as much land being, there's more land being acquired from me that is necessary, and it's going to impact the way I could. How is that balanced, as far as we know, by On Board Pinola? Because, you know, to them, that is it's all subjective, right? That is obviously a significant personal concern that they could argue very clearly is very valid, versus, you know, the need to progress a project like this. So do we know how someone's genuine concerns versus, you could argue, the overall good is balanced by the likes of On Board Pinola?
Well, obviously, look, it's important infrastructure for the country and for the county. So I think above all, we look at that first of all. So we're not putting forward the scheme if we didn't need the scheme. So it's part of the policy and the council to develop the scheme. So first of all, the people of Donegal generally want the scheme to happen, right? That's the first thing. So that's the first thing they look at. Secondly, then, look, all submissions are fair and reasonable. Like, you know, people have every right to make the case for themselves. We would have to show, and this is what we'd have to do, is that what we're acquiring for the scheme is reasonable and fair for the to develop the scheme. We're not, the justification for the scheme itself is not part of it. It's what we're trying to acquire is reasonable and fair from the individual involved, and that we've been through the process properly and correctly all the way through. That's why the process at times can be very slow, because we have to make sure that we've had enough engagement and we talk to people, and that these issues have been ironed out with people, or at least discussed with people, you know, before we actually go into the planning process itself, which we would have done with I would say, nearly everybody on the scheme. So, look, Commission Pinola, I think, would weigh up that, and they would take that the scheme is the importance of the scheme, and every scheme, you know, it will affect somebody, no matter where we put it. So, therefore, if we're building a scheme at all, then these things happen. And while it may be, it might discommode individuals, at the same time, it still has to happen, if you know what I mean.
Okay, well, there could have been a sort of legislative weight to that, because people would be familiar with new recent government critical infrastructure legislation that is designed to, I presume, fast-track projects that are seen to be, you know, critically of critical infrastructural importance. TEN-T not in that. Would you or the council or whomever have applied for inclusion under those headings, yeah, or what happened?
That process is internally a process with the government. We don't have a say in that, nor do, say, even TII have a say in that as such. No, obviously, look, the Critical Infrastructure Act is an important piece of legislation to try and push to what the government sees as their topmost critical projects around the country. Now, at the moment, they put 9 projects in there. There's basically 3 from each region, if you want to put it that way, and there's 3 types of projects in each region as well. So the road project in the wider northwest region is the Galway Outer Relief Road. Mm. Now, clearly, you know, in Donegal, we feel like that's not appropriate. Our most important project by a long way for a generation is this 10T products. Now, the 9.6 bit motor is the start. They have said that other products may be or will be included. So, look, we've obviously, you know, we're disappointed that we're not in there straight up. But even at this stage, we would hope that, you know, given the issues that we have there and the acknowledged importance of the project, that they would include us in that list. The importance of being on the critical infrastructure list, it gives it priority with all the departments that deal with that project, okay? And it also gives it some priority in respect to conflicting policies such as climate, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what the Critical Infrastructure Act tries to do.
Okay.
So we would hope still that it would be included. We're disappointed that it wasn't, straight up, to tell you the truth, though. But it's not something you can just lobby on. It says there was no... It's not a consultation document.
I get you, yeah. Debbie, just finally, when do you anticipate a decision on whether or not this project will go to an oral hearing?
If we get the submissions back from Christian Pinola, so we're talking about probably the end of September, I would think probably in around October of this year, we'll get a decision. They'll probably make a call on that. That's what I would suggest.
Okay, listen.
So it just depends on the volume of stuff that comes in and depends on if any issues rise in the meanwhile, obviously.
I get you. Damien, thank you very much for that. Just an update on the 10T project. Mary T. Sweeney is ANTHU representative. And Mary T., we were inundated yesterday by contacts from frustrated motorists. And these aren't people who just... were like, you know, oh my word, this is an inconvenience. You know, it's people going, you know, to childminders, hospital appointments, to and from work, etc. There was a collision in Letterkenny at some point yesterday, it would seem, but that can't explain, surely, the gridlock that people had to endure throughout the course of the day.
No, and it probably didn't help the work that's been done on the Drumlahoe Road out on what we would call the Lek, the bypass. And the reality is that... the only group of people that have a major ability to make a contribution to council are our ratepayers, our business owners. And several of them have contacted me to say, you know, somebody has got to do something. And years ago, in different capacity, in different environmental groups I was involved with, we could have set up a meeting with Donegal County Council, and they came out and they met the public. Not in these, what I would term, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, like a farcical consultation periods, which are like they're hit and go. They're fly in, fly out. Mm. You know, they did a consultation in the market square and they didn't knock on the business owners and ask them to contribute. It's we need real discussion, not aggressively, but in a realistic manner to say, okay, Europe is saying this. They're giving us funding for that. The government's saying this. But we need to listen to the people first.
So what if you, as rep with ANTHU and as a community campaigner, etc., if you're calling a meeting of businesses in the Station House, Letterkenny, at 7pm on Saturday night, what's the function of the chamber? Because you're saying you're being contacted by businesses who are concerned about traffic movement in Letterkenny. And I get that. We get that too. But is that not what the Chamber of Commerce is for? That is... a collection of Letterkenny businesses that have meetings with government officials.
Well, the reality is I have already written to Donegal County Council. I haven't yet written to the Chamber of Commerce, but I'm also going to facilitate writing to the Chamber of Commerce because, and since I've done that, the Chamber's on my next line to do today because likewise, I've been quite busy last night myself. The amount of feedback I've got on this has been unreal. But what I'm saying to you, Greg, is, and this is not about party politics, this is about a genuine concern for Letterkenny and the workings of Letterkenny and the community within Letterkenny, that we are not making the best representation at the moment to benefit our town or our community or our hospital. And these are genuine concerns that I passionately hold. And this is not like, the reality is I feel, and I have since, I'm going to put this to you today, the council are no longer accountable to come out and stand and take questions publicly from the floor, which I think is a very constructive way to hear the real passion of the people. And you will get genuine ideas and good feedback. And I can't understand how I could go to public consultations in Inishowen over the past couple of years. And they do that. And, you know, to come into Letterkenny, I was on Letterkenny Main Street last Saturday and it was dead. Now, there was no traffic because there was nobody on the shops. And I do not know how the businesses are surviving on a Saturday because it was so quiet. It really was quite eerie quiet. And we need to do more, number one, to protect our main street. But to do that, we have to have a traffic management place, working traffic management system. At one of the public consultations they held in the station house, I asked them, when was the latest traffic feasibility study done? And it was, you and I talked about this on radio, Greg, and it was years before. It hadn't
Yeah,
been updated.
but what
So what
it,
I'm saying is
yeah.
that I genuinely believe that if the business community come into the room, the engineers come into the room, and the Chamber of Commerce come into the room, then they can best represent. That's why I think we need a
But
dedicated
let me
meeting
put
for
it to
business
you,
meetings.
Mary T. You said that Letterkenny Main Street was empty on Saturday.
On the
So,
Saturday that I
yeah.
was at last
So
Saturday.
my point is that not proof? And I'm trying to be balanced here. Don't shoot the messenger. Is that not
Okay.
proof that, not you, is that not proof that Letterkenny come in and shop on a Saturday? You think it's busy? Come in and shop.
Sorry, no. People are avoiding Letterkenny. They're shopping somewhere else. That's my point. That's exactly my. And if you look at the comments on my feedback, people are saying, I wouldn't be bothered trying to navigate it anymore. So that shows there's a real downturn in the economy
Okay,
of the
so
main street.
again, I'm just trying to tease this out so we're solution focused. If people are avoiding Letterkenny now, how could Letterkenny be literally a massive car park for a full day?
Well, we need to have a better structure for traffic management. People have the fear, and I'm sure you hear this, Greg. I'm seeing, I'm reading it, and I'm presuming that people are telling the truth. That the idea is that if you don't have a ring system, that traffic is moving all the time. Like, why are we doing roadworks in Lech during the day? Why is it not closed at night when there's least traffic on it? If it costs 20% more, then it costs 20% more. It's still a better management of the structure of the community overall.
Yeah,
You know,
there's a few,
sensible things like this.
like, I just don't know how they fix it, to be honest with you, because this I'm not fantastic at the names of roads, but up until recently, you would approach a roundabout and there'd be a left turning lane and a right turning lane. Now, on a couple of the roundabouts, that's been narrowed down to a single lane. So clearly, that is going to mean traffic will not move as smoothly, as quickly as it should. So we seem to be going in the other direction. We seem to be actually narrowing the roads, but also narrowing the junctions, and there's no traffic lights to get the traffic move. Like, I don't know. I don't know what they'll do. Like, it's a very struct and constructive thing to have a meeting on Saturday night. I will be fascinated to see what comes from it because I don't know. I think there's so much infrastructural change that's been done up until now. How can you put the genie back in the bottle? Do you get me, Mary T?
Well, I actually was thinking this morning, because people were ringing me even this morning about this, and I was actually thinking, Greg, that I'm trying to make this apolitical as much as possible. This is a community initiative. This is not about politics, and that's genuine. And I'm quite happy. You know, if someone like you, Greg, were to host a discussion between the council and the business owners, would they be more receptive to that? It'll
I'm
be
going
interesting.
to the business owners because in sitting here, right, Mary T, you know, there's consequences of words. So I'm conscious of if I say, and it's not fully accurate, that Letterkenny's a car park, then that could end up actually costing businesses. So what do we do? I say, Caroline, or Caroline says to me, we better get the chamber on. So we get a representative on from the chamber and they say, look, for an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening, it's bad. But other than that, Letterkenny's fine. You can get in, you can move around and all that kind of stuff. So that's what happens when I reach out to businesses to try and get us to try and get balance. You get me, Mary T? They're
Yeah.
saying, like any big town, it's busy at certain times, but like on the Saturday that you mentioned, or after 10 o'clock in the morning or before the rush in the evening, Letterkenny's fine. So I can't necessarily find the business people that want to go head to head with the council to claim that it's a disaster, if you understand me.
Yeah, well, the reality is, Greg, that there hasn't been enough consultation with the business owners. And the reality is, it's impacting the health services and access to appointments and hospital appointments and all of that. And it doesn't matter if you're 2 hours late, you now get a notice from the health service. If you miss your appointment, then you're taken off the list.
Yeah,
That's
okay.
scary. That is scary. And the reality is that my opinion is that people have asked me. Now, I didn't realize when I arranged initially, apparently the not the Swell Festival, the summer festival is on Saturday evening, which may generate a traffic flow condition. So I am going to consult with the business owners this week to make sure that Saturday at 7 would be the best time. And as I say, if necessary, we can re-advise. But I would love to see somebody independent like yourself hosting a public debate between them
Yes,
to
but
say,
but my point is
what can we
get
do?
me the business people. The lines are open. I want to speak to them. Get me the business people that agree with you and say, you know, the council need to do something ASAP. Do you get, like, I'm not being evasive, but I'm
No,
saying we reach out, Caroline, don't we? Have we been in contact? We've already been in contact with the chamber today, or we're going to be in contact with them saying, look, what's your view on the traffic? Here's a platform, speak about it. And the last time we did, it was to say that things aren't as bad as is being made out. So I don't know. I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't, Mary T.
well, the reality for me is that the reality is seen. It's the visuals of what you see.
Yeah, I get
And
you.
the
Yeah,
You know, so there's no lying. Well, the camera never lies. The camera does lie nowadays with all the AI and the technology. You can't even use that expression easily anymore because it's not the truth anymore. But we all are aware that there's a legitimate concern. And the more pressure we raise from the public and the business community, then the more the council, the engineers are the people that make
Yes,
decisions.
but we
They're
also have to
qualified.
factor in who do you have the debate with the council within? Because the councillors, the elected representatives, it was they that voted in favour of the active travel, which is what's causing all the problems, arguably, at the moment. It's the councillors, the elected representatives, the democratically elected people. You could have been amongst them. It is they that had the vote, and they voted to say, right, the money's there. We'll need this infrastructure in place for when the T10T is finished. Let's go ahead. So it is they that you know. So who are you, who's the debate between? The executive will say, listen, we didn't make this decision. It was your local authority members that made this decision.
Now, I've always said that when you go to the public consultation, when you do get that opportunity with them, that the engineers are there. Now, some of them are subcontracted and there are some resident engineers. So I wrote to the senior engineer, the director of roads and transportation, and asked him to send a delegation to meet with the business owners directly. But I think it has to be in that public forum. Of course, the chamber can be there, but there are different issues affecting different aspects of Letterkenny. It has to be, so people need to hear collectively, and it would take a series of meetings really to generate a proper consultation on this. But if we continue to ignore, we are all equally doing damage to our community and the structure, the fabric of our the working, the comfortable working of our community and trying to access schools and hospitals and appointments and work.
Right, so I think we can say at this stage is it Saturday night's meeting at 7 p.m. is provisional at this point. You're going to have to get,
Because of
yeah, of
the other
course.
fest, there's a
Right.
major big festival on in town that weekend.
Okay,
So,
yeah, okay, well, it's
and
provisional,
I
so
am
we'll see.
appealing today to the business owners that anybody, my number's out there, you can contact me through Highland Radio. That if anybody, if you want to change, I've invited the council to see if they have facility, if they're going to facilitate delegates coming from them to give
But you also
genuine
need the elective
policy.
rep, the local elected representatives that voted for active travel, invite them as well because they are convinced it's still the right decision.
Well, they've always been invited to all the meetings that I do. And as I say, I sincerely hope they have the resources, they have the secretaries, I need to put pressure on them to do what needs to be done, to listen to the people. I personally think we need to reintroduce the concept that if you have a petition and you have people's names with their PPSN number and or a postcode for an address, that if you reach a certain percentage, then there must be a further review of any plan that's going on in your community. Because this is an example of it. One of the things I'd like to say before we finish up on it, Greg, is that the major 10T project, unfortunately, I missed a lot of your interview there and the reception wasn't great.
Well, really, what they were saying wasn't, it wasn't fantastic. They were saying effectively that things are moving as proposed. We'll know from on Bull Planala later this year if it's going to an oral hearing, but it's progressing as through the planning process at this point on the timeline they'd expect it to.
Right, well, In relation to Letterkenny traffic, and this is one of the points, and because I'm local, maybe it makes it easier because I know the roads, but most people have had to learn the roads. The Leck Road would be considered the bypass to Letterkenny. It's the parallel road that runs right out, and it takes you in what was originally the main road into Letterkenny, the main Dublin road coming in there over the Old Town Bridge. The main focus of the TEN-T plan initially for the bypass, the Leck bypass, was to upgrade the Leck Road. Now, my argument and discussion with the roads engineers had been, and thankfully they appear to be listening now, is it would be absolute chaos for you to take 2 years to upgrade the Leck Road and leave us with no bypass. We needed to you to build a new greenfield road that can facilitate the movement of traffic in some sense and alleviate the pressure on the Port Bridge.
I mean, I know a lot
And
of
they're now
people.
doing that.
Yeah,
And that's how consultation can work.
I get you. Okay, listen, thanks for that, Mary T. That's aimed to Rep Mary T. Sweeney there. Right, I can drive into Derry within 5 minutes. I'm parked up doing my shopping into the car and 5 minutes later I'm out on the road. I go to Tesco's in Letterkenny, 30 minutes in traffic going in, 30 minutes in traffic getting out. Simple. Now, we hear anecdotal stories of, well, no, less people are going in or people are avoiding Letterkenny. So it's great, Claire, to speak to you because it's a reality, right? You've changed something about your routine because of the traffic. So what's good morning, Claire. What's the story with you?
Good morning, Greg. I had a membership out in the Clannery Hotel for the Leisure Centre. I've had it for about 4 years. Myself and the kids always go swimming. And I literally, this year, I am not renewing it. I am not going out that road again. I used to spend nearly 40 minutes trying to get out to the Clannery. I don't live that far from it. It's like a 5 minute drive, not even. We used to spend 40 minutes going out. We used to spend about an hour and a half in the pool and we'd spend nearly an hour trying to get back into Letterkenny.
And that was over the course of multiple visits at different times. So we're not talking about one day here. You're assessing it over the long term.
Saturdays or the evening times. And I used to do it in the mornings as well. I used to just go for a morning swim, not doing it anymore. So they've officially lost my membership for this year, which is 800 quid nearly for like a membership for a family. Like, so it's not small money either, like. So now I go to the Aura maybe once every now and then, but it's just crazy just to think that that business has lost my membership because I will not sit in that traffic anymore.
What if you need stuff in town, you know, shopping, I don't know, or, you know, groceries?
Yeah,
or...
I do find myself going just to Spar or Centra now because it's just too much try and get to Aldi or Lidl. I'll do one big shop, but even for the essentials where I used to run to Aldi just for bread and milk, I'm going to the local shop now because it's easier and it's far handier. But even like to drop off the child to school for like September, before school shut, probably April time, I was coming from the top of Glencar where, say, the Irish school is. And just to get to Errico College was nearly taking me 55 minutes. Right. Now, I used to go the Windy Hall Road, and sometimes it was okay, but then they built, obviously, the new housing estate at the end of it, and it was just mayhem. You'd be sitting on the road for about 35 minutes. Like, it was easier to get them to get out and walk, like, for him to walk up the road.
So your day, your summer, even though you're working, your summer the summer holidays have been like a holiday compared to what's facing you in the dark recesses of winter. Dreading it.
Yeah, I'm absolutely dreading September. I have no idea how we're going to get the kids to school. Like, I work at 9 up the mountain top, and I have one drop off, and my other two kids get a school bus because they're going the other direction. They're in primary school. And if I didn't have the primary school bus, it wouldn't be feasible at all. There's no way in hell I'd make it to
work.
Pack and work and homeschool,
I think that would be your only solution.
Yeah.
You were in the bank yesterday, I understand, just because this is the kind of conversations that are happening out in the street, so to speak. Go ahead, Claire.
I was in the bank at 4 o'clock yesterday, and I had an appointment at 4 o'clock, and this gentleman walked in at about 4:15. He said he was sitting in the Polestar roundabout. It took him an hour and 40 minutes. He had an appointment to collect cash at the bank, and they stopped giving out cash at a certain time in the bank, so they couldn't give him his whatever he needed. So they told me he had to come back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh my good God, like if he had something that he really urgently needed that money for, because of the traffic, he missed his collection.
Yeah, he could have been going to pick up a car or anything, or exactly, even for a business exactly. Phone or whatever, like, it might be.
And it obviously wasn't money he could get out of an ATM either. Like, yeah. So, you know, that is bonkers that Claire, he sat for an hour and 40 minutes.
Really interesting to sort of get the actual real life impacts on and decisions you've made on the back of it. Not just yesterday, but over the course of time. Thanks, Claire. Have a great day.
Greg, this has gone on months. It needs to be sorted.
Look after yourself, Claire. A caller says the Chamber's silence is deafening. They are not doing anything proactive to solve the issue. As a business owner in Letterkenny yesterday, I was frustrated. Everyone was in for appointment and we had to accept that everyone was late. I feel the Chamber is pointless and I'll be pulling my account from it, they say. Now, that business owner didn't want to come on the radio and speak. And that's no shame or no shade. I understand that. But my point is this is... this is when you sort of try and get the business side of it. We can get a text. But anyway, let's go to Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly. And I suppose, you know, you and Councillor Kieran Brogan, were you the only two Letterkenny councillors that voted against these active travel proposals, as far as I can recall? Are you there?
Greg, listen, there was a number of councillors that voted against us throughout the county, and I think it's very important that message is firmly delivered, because there seems to be a sense out there that every councillor voted for this active travel plan in Letterkenny, which that is not the case. I personally was very firm and still very firm that I was not supporting it and did not support it. But listen, there's a number of councillors, as I say, the list's available. I'm not going to be throwing anybody under the bus, but the list available who voted for this act of travel and who voted against it. And I think, Greg, listen, I've asked for a full review of the act of travel on numerous occasions, and it seems to be falling on deaf ears. And the last time that I looked for a review on this, or I brought the topic up, I was told that it's too late. And, Greg, it's never too late. And that's a message that needs to be delivered.
Is it not too late, though, Donald, in fairness? Because look at the junctions have been narrowed, roundabouts have been removed, the layout's been altered, roads have been narrowed that would cost millions to widen again, don't you know? Is it not too late, if the truth be told?
Listen, Greg, at the end of the day, this is public money that's been spent. And the narrowing down of lanes, particularly going into roundabouts, is absolutely shocking. You know, you take, for example, Thomas Keyes's shop there in Ballyrain, at Letterkenny Skip Hire there, the roundabout, again at the hospital. I mean, the list goes on. And, Greg, you know, I firmly believe it's not too late, because the reason I say that is by the time this active travel is finished, it's going to cost millions. So, listen, why not do the right thing now and spend the millions and put the roads back to the way they were? Because at the end of the day, the people, they're on the need steady, Greg. You know, and the public's concerns and views should be taken on board here. And that doesn't seem to be the case. Mm. And I think the right thing to do is, we haven't seen the worst of this yet, Greg. That's the unfortunate side of it. And that's my own personal opinion. I think we haven't seen the worst of it. I was up the last day, I went from the Kilmacrennan roundabout at the hospital up there past Wendy Hall. And you know this, it's shocking what's going on. And we've seen traffic yesterday, Greg. It was unbelievable. My phone was happening rightly. So
what are you calling
the
for?
The schools aren't even back yet, Greg.
Don't even start, I know. What is your call?
You know, and we have businesses, but it's very important, Greg, I need to get this point out. It's very important that we don't send the wrong message out that Letterkenny is closed for business, because Letterkenny is open for business. And what I personally want to see is every business in Letterkenny booming. But unfortunately, I'm getting calls from businesses stating clearly that the footfall through the door is consistently getting worse and worse and worse. And now, we have Donegal County Council at the minute, and they're looking for ourselves as councillors to increase the rates. I mean, It's unbelievable. And how could you put rates up in any business at the minute and let the Kenny with the suffering that they're going through? I just can't get my head around it, Greg.
Okay, just briefly, what are you calling for to happen now? Like, in reality, what are you saying should happen now in relation to Letterkenny?
If I had a magic wand, Greg, this very minute, I would put a stop to the works in Letterkenny. I would have a full review of the active travel plan to see, for the council, and to outline exactly to the public and build their confidence that it's going to work. Because for me, I have absolutely no confidence in it. And, you know, to keep pushing forward and keep pushing forward against what the general public want, I think personally it's the wrong thing to do.
Okay. Right.
And for myself as a county councillor, I was elected by the people to represent the people. My job is to bring forward the views and opinions of the public out there. And that's what I have been doing from the day I have been elected, and I'll continue to do that. But unfortunately,
that.
Greg, that's not been heard.
Okay, Councillor.
You mean?
Yeah, I have to go to the news
at 10. That's frustrating.
Yeah, no, you've made that point. I appreciate your time. That's Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly.
On air, online, and on your smart speaker. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hi, Greg. Could you please raise the possibility of Largie Brack Road not being taken out of commission when TEN-T opens and keep it as a relief local road? It's proposed to close it altogether. Mary T is right. I went to Tinney's Toys and intended to run into Dunn's. Got stuck in traffic after the Now Dock, or the old Now Dock. I sat for more than 15 minutes, turned at a convenient gateway and went back to Ballybofeta's shop. That was around 12:30. Morning, Greg. The bottleneck created by the road planners at Ballyrain is a huge contributing factor to the gridlock. There's a new cycle lane that's as wide as the road, and the two lanes have been narrowed to one lane. Throw in the traffic lights at the Polestar, and it is a recipe for utter disaster. The two biggest employers in the town use this route to leave the town, Tata and the hospital. I know that's only part of the town, but it's a huge problem. Turn off the lights and open the lanes again. 2 hours yesterday for a 15-minute trip. There are a lot of businesses not in the chamber, Greg, indeed, and I'm reaching out to them and I want to speak to people. It's not, I hope it's coming across as clear as is possible, that the voice that seems to be absent in much of this conversation, and it's not for the want of us trying, is businesses people or business people that are saying, right, enough is enough. If this is their view, I can't put words in their mouths. Enough is enough. The town now is hard to negotiate, it's putting people off, and it's affecting our bottom lines. The lines are open, 086 60 25,000. A business, obviously, that's going to be greatly affected, but also is a critical element of people getting about. Not everybody has cars. Shane Gallagher, Managing Director of Letterkenny Cabs. Hi, Shane. Well, Sean, I beg your pardon.
Sean Gallagher. Sean Gallagher.
Yeah, of course, Sean. My apologies. Right. What are you saying today about the situation in Letterkenny and the traffic, Sean?
Look, Craig, there's not much point chatting anymore about what's going to help it. I think it's now time for the next step. I personally, Craig, think it is time that, as an employer, Craig, I have legal duties under the Safety, Health and Welfare at Work Act 2005 to provide, so far as reasonable practice, a safe place of work and a safe system of work for my employees. I can no longer do that, Craig.
Why not?
Repeated traffic delays, persistent congestion, inadequate road capacity has created working conditions, Craig, that expose drivers to stress, fatigue, frustration, and I can't keep asking these drivers to come in the day, Craig, not knowing what they come in. And I couldn't blame them if they didn't.
Mm. What's the practicalities of, as I say, the taxis and cabs, etc.? I don't think get the credit they deserve in getting people about the place. A public transport almost, although you have to pay for it, but it's incredibly important. How can you function as a business, Sean? And I'm not asking for any personal accounting information, don't get me wrong, but if your wheels aren't turning, you're not making money. Now, you are on the meter, don't get me wrong, but people are not going to be sitting in the car not moving either. So as a long-established, important business in Letterkenny, how are you keeping the shutters up?
Look, Craig, the data will tell us, Craig, that we're doing as much work as we ever have. But as I said to our drivers last week, I know you might not be seeing it in your pocket, and you're trying to sell that line, but the stress is unreal, Craig. Yeah. And you come home in the evening there, Craig, and you're trying to play with your children, and you're shattered.
Yeah.
And you can chat about money, Craig, but it's a service level, right? Mm. We're chatting about a service level that you want to maintain. And drivers are getting frustrated. Customers are frustrated. Dispatch operators are getting it from customers. And they're frustrated, Craig.
Yeah.
And, see, I have had videos up there constantly on Facebook for the last 2 weeks, just maybe where could things be improved, but I don't think the appetite for change is there, Craig.
But so, let me ask you, no one is going to know the roads at different times in different parts of Letterkenny than you are, Sean, or your drivers are. What is your call today? In, you know, the local councillors, they voted for this. Actually, I beg your pardon. It was across the county, councillors voted for this. A, it's a two-part question. A, has it worsened since the active travel works started? Has it worsened?
Oh, it has. Look, right. Craig, I thought me and you would might be having this conversation in September. Mm. I put up a video on Tuesday to say I was taking a break from the videos and knowing that I would be back on in September. Yesterday was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Okay.
And, Craig, I am asking transport operators out there, and I'm also, not just transport operators, anybody affected, and I'm also looking for legal counsel, Craig, to go on the county council. I think enough is enough.
I do believe
that there is a case there.
What is your call on the local authority today, Sean? What do you think they could or should do to try and offer immediate relief to the likes of yourself and everybody else that's heavily impacted?
It's too late, Craig.
You can't undo the work that's been done, really.
Yes, that's done, Craig.
That's the truth. I mean, there's cycle lanes the width of the road. Could you start going at them with jackhammers clearing them? There's double entrance
and Craig, who's going to stand up and admit that they've got it wrong? Who is the person in the council that applied for the funding? There has to be a name of somebody that applied for the funding and thought this was going to be a good idea.
But it comes down, I mean, like, I'm not, it comes down to a vote, though, and it was vote at council level. I mean, what do you know the reality, Sean, is you kick the can down the road till the 10T's done. That's it. And then all of a sudden it'll seem fantastic. I mean, what's the alternative?
Craig, I've already said, I put up a video as well, that Bunagee link is not in the right place. It's not coming out in the right place.
Mm. Yeah.
Craig, I don't have the answers, but I am hoping that a legal route may. See, it's only a matter of time, Craig, before one of my drivers takes me to court.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. It's dire then. I mean, you know, as I say, you're on the ground, Sean. You're going to know as much as anyone. You're getting the feedback from your drivers and the call centre.
I said to Caroline, I says, Craig, I was on with you 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Given a few things that might help. None of it touched, Craig.
Mm.
You know, one of them was another road out of Dunn's. That time that they were building that contraption down beside the council offices, that road, I thought at that time that was a road out of New Dunn's.
Yeah.
To go on to the Neil T. Blaney. They wasted €1 million. €1 million, Craig.
How would you rate the €16 million spent on the four lanes?
I'll just leave it, Craig. I say.
Don't want to wind you up.
I just
either.
Wouldn't like to go into that.
Okay.
I did say at the time, Craig, it wasn't going to change the volume of traffic on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, Craig, can we get some sort of expertise here into the county right away?
Right, okay. It's dire. Listen,
whether that's, as I say, Craig, is that out of the Netherlands? Switzerland, places that can do it.
Sligo did it. Sligo seem to have. I know every topography is different, but you know Sligo's often used an example. You can fly past it, going to Dublin. But if you
can we get the road engineers up here as a matter of urgency?
Right, Sean. Listen, I'm sorry. Life is as stressful as it is. It shouldn't be. I appreciate your time, Sean Gallagher. Who is the managing director of Letterkenny Cabs. From Hospital Roundabout to Knocknamona Roundabout, there are 16 entrances, exits, 16 in normal country. When there are more exits added, the road is widened. It'll be grand, Ireland. There is competence, but this is pure apathetic about job levels, and it's not working. We need something done. Another, Greg, I'm listening to two Fianna Fáil councillors trying to excuse themselves from the mess their party was responsible for. What is needed is a bypass like Tralee in County Kerry. I'm living here now for 27 years and live directly above the four lanes, and the traffic gridlock has been like that for years. Also, the Remelton Road always backs to Alcorns. It's time the people waved the big stick at the elections and voted them out. Another, roundabouts are designed to keep traffic flowing. Now we have the Polestar roundabout with 14 or 16 sets of traffic lights. Now they're putting overhead lights at the Ballyrane roundabout. The people who signed off on this needs to rethink ASAP. We are going to have more lights in a little town in Ireland than there are in New York City. Another, Greg, while active travel is blamed for towns' traffic issues, the problems go back 30 years. Will the 4.6 allocation be enough? Work is proceeding quite slowly. Several ambitious town plans since 2009 have been great, but little work done while the population increased. How many of the targets in enclosed plans have been met? That comes in from Daniel. Yes, the active plan travel has worsened the situation from the reports I get, Daniel. It's not my view. I don't travel around it enough, but a caller says, we've bicycle lanes in Letterkenny, but I've never seen anyone on a bicycle. We have bottlenecks of traffic. I agree with Councillor Donald Mandy-Kelly. And that's the elephant in the room. You know, you're sitting in traffic and you are seeing no one on the cycle lanes, except scooters, that probably shouldn't be on them anyway. I think they're supposed to be on the roads, but that's by the by. And then we spent 16 million on the four lanes and cyclists are driving up the road because the four lanes, cycle lanes, aren't maintained or aren't suitable for bikes. And we see it elsewhere, stuck behind two lads. You'd swear they're about to take on the mountain stages of the Tour de France coming out of Downing's. Multi-million euro cycle lane on the right. Two fellas taking up the full lane abreast on the actual road. So a lot of cyclists simply don't use these cycle lanes anyway, as it is, and yet we're building more. Inundated with messages. Thank you so much for taking the time to get in touch with us. Right, okay, I want to go to Sharon O'Donnell. Hi, Sharon.
Oh, good morning. How are you? I can't see you here.
Don't worry about that. I can see you, and trust me, your view's better than my view's better than your view might be. Right.
Yeah, I know. Look at this morning. We have stunning.
Absolutely
fab.
Stunning.
Absolutely. Yeah, beautiful.
Good morning. You and your two sons are taking on the world's toughest road. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, so this December we're heading off to La Gomera and we're going to row 3,000 miles across the Atlantic to the Caribbean.
And
just like that.
What is the common interest? Obviously, it's quite unique, isn't it, that a mum and her two sons might take on such a challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, originally it was my intention to go solo. But then when I announced when I announced what I was going to do to the boys here a couple of years ago, one Christmas, we were all sitting at the table. I told them about my plans, and you know, before I finished explaining myself, they said, "No way, are we letting you go on your own?" So, there you go. It just happened like that. Yeah.
Why is this classed as the world's toughest row? Is it purely about the distance, or is it the waters that you cross, or?
It's a combination of everything. Obviously, the distance is 3,000 miles. So it's typically, you know, on a good day, we might get 50 miles a day. So if you do the math, you can tell, you know, you can work out pretty quick that it's not going to be a short haul. It'll take us between 40 and 60 days. I mean, 40 is the very, very upper end of it, you know, but it could take up to 60 days and even more. It takes some time.
I mean, there's the physical endurance, but that mental isolation as well. I mean, people do experiments to test the ability of the human mind, and they wouldn't last anywhere near this. How are you preparing for the physical and mental side of it?
Well, the physical is it's pretty much on the erg, on the rowing machine, and out and about on the boat as well, and a combination of just working out in the loft, actually in the shed. That's where that's happening. But for the mental part of it, actually, I'm looking forward to that part the most, because I do enjoy retreats and I do enjoy having the headspace, because typically life is very busy. We're rushing and ducking and diving and, you know, we're just typically very busy. So I'm really looking forward to being in the moment and being in the headspace, and we have the time for that to happen. So I'm really looking forward to that.
What about logistics, i.e., you know, support vessels and all that type of stuff, Sharon?
So we're going as part of a fleet. There's actually 41 other boats along with ourselves taking place in this race. So we leave on the 12th of December within 2 minutes apart. So they start with the teams of 5, 4, 3, 2, and down to solos. So after about the first 48 hours, the fleet does spread out, but we're not that far from the shipping lane. So in the event of having to be recovered or rescued, that's, you know, we're going to be dependent on the shipping in that area, because we're going to be just so far to be able to get a vessel to us. But we are self-sufficient. We have all our safety equipment on board. We have our life raft. We have our flares. We have our EPIRBs, PLBs, VHF, AIS. You know, we have all mod cons. So we're very lucky in that regard. And we have spares of everything.
Yeah, but that's all weight as well, too.
It is, absolutely.
So talk to me about the vessel, the boat that you will be in. Describe it to me.
This is the boat behind me, as you can see. Yeah, so that's the boat behind. I don't know how to do this very well.
Aha, yes, you're doing it well now.
Yeah, am I doing it right?
Do you know what? Do you know the picture on that boat? I was just looking at you. I thought that was the background, the real background.
Okay, there you go.
The way you were standing, it was perfect.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Well, so we're taking a bit of home with us, actually, when we go.
It's beautiful.
We're taking, because this is our patch. This is our own lighthouse here, on the island. So it's very familiar, and it's important that we have the support. And you know, as I say, we have the people at home behind us.
So give us a wee scan of the boat there again, if you don't mind, Sharon.
I'm just going to have to turn this camera around.
Okay.
I'm really sorry.
Sure. No, it's fine.
I don't even know where the flip button is.
Grand. It's like a circle.
I don't know how to do
that.
Okay,
well, listen, do it that way.
Yeah. Is that all right?
Okay, do it that way. Right, that's perfect. Okay.
Yeah, so there we go.
It's big.
That's the stern. It's pretty small. We're going to be, it's back to front. It's Winnie Mae. That's our granddaughter, and we've named the boat after her. So sorry, that's in reverse because
I can't
flip the
camera. No, it's perfect, actually. Yeah. Winnie Mae, I can read that.
Okay. Yeah. Then we have, the images are repeated on the site, and then we have our sponsors all along. Here we're displaying all our sponsors. And there's room for plenty more sponsors, so please get in touch. And obviously we're doing this charity for the lifeboats, and this is our own boat, and of course we have Errigal with us here as well, so that's we're bringing everything with us that we need.
I know you say it's not too big, but for three people to row, you know, there's quite a bit of weight in there, you know what I mean? It's gonna take quite a bit of energy. It is literally like you're sitting and the three of you are rowing, like, you know, we would expect.
The seats, we haven't our seats in now at the minute, but there's three seating positions here, and we have three rowing positions. Most likely it's going to be there'll be two up, as they call it, so that one will be resting, because we obviously can't row all the time. We have to rest and sleep and eat. So we'll be rotating shifts. So it's 2 hour on, 2 hour off. That's the plan. That may change as we get into the race, that we may have to do, like, you know, 3 hours on, 2 hours off.
You'll just have to vibe it when you're out there, won't you?
We're going to have to adapt it. Absolutely, absolutely.
And as you said, and they're pictured on the boat, and listen, the RNLI crews were out yesterday saving lives.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's all about the RNLI in terms of awareness and fundraising, Sharon.
For sure, yeah. Myself and Evan, one of the lads, were part of the crew here for the last, you know, a good lock of years, Glenn is not yet, but you never know, that may be down the line, and it's really important that we have the volunteers, and that the volunteers are supported, actually, and that we need funds. It is a it is a charity, and we depend entirely on the lifeboat here on the island, particularly, and on our coastal region. So it's an essential service, and we're really lucky to have it. So I think it's a great thing that we should support. I mean, I know there's loads and tons of charities out there that are equally as important, and we would love to be able to do something for all of them. But we decided just that we sat down and you know, we kind of had a discussion on what way we were going to go with our fundraising. So because we have, a vested interest on the lifeboat here, we decided that was going to be our charity. And we're delighted that you know, we're delighted to be attempting to raise funds for the service here. But it's really important to us.
Absolutely, yeah. Brilliant. Now, there's a very special afternoon between 2:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. at the lifeboat station at Pulawadi on Aranmore Island. So I imagine anyone who's intending to go has their plans well made now. But tell us about it's about officially launching this amazing effort that you and your sons are undertaking.
Yeah, so we're going to launch our campaign today. We have a little bit of social media going on already, but just to make it official. And we're also, very importantly, having the boat blessed and named, officially named today. And we're having a blessing. So Father John Duffy is going to come in this afternoon and do that blessing for us, which is really important because we want to be safe, and we know that if we have all that done, that it's going to heighten our chances, you know, that we're going to have every chance of success. So it's important to us as a family and as a community. We are an island. We are surrounded by the sea, you know, and we have to traverse that, you know, that narrow stretch of water on a regular basis. So we have a huge respect for it, and therefore we want, you know, to keep all the traditions that go with that.
And with that in mind, because there was quite a bit of thought went into the name of the boat. So give us the name of the boat and the significance of it.
Yeah, so the boat is called Winnie Mae, and that's our granddaughter, our first grandchild and only grandchild so far. We're just waiting on the second arrival at the end of the year, so that's really exciting for us. But this is our first granddaughter, and we're so delighted to have, you know, have her name on the boat and really to inspire lots of females, you know, inspire everybody that we're only ordinary people, but, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can achieve extraordinary things.
Yes, it's absolutely unbelievable. Listen,
and here she is.
Oh, there she is.
She's
the girl herself.
We're home for the special occasion, yeah. So that's our little Miss Winnie Mae. Yeah.
Winnie Mae. Hello, Winnie. Can you hear? Hi. Hi, Winnie. Wave.
The sun is in her eyes like myself.
I know. Listen, what a beautiful, beautiful wee thing. It's amazing what you're doing. I can't wait to sort of keep track of it and even bring our listeners some updates in relation to it. It's a huge undertaking. It's a wonderful story for all the right reasons. Because the RNLI are second to none. Thank you so much, and good luck this afternoon, by the way.
Thanks very
with the
much,
launch,
Ian.
It's exciting.
Thank you.
Look after
we'll
yourself.
We'll be talking to you again.
Of course
right,
you will. Look, slant. Okay, back after these. I have two guests in studio with me, Jaden McElhenney from Manor Cunningham. Good morning, Jaden.
Hello.
Good to have you in with us. And Dad Kelvin is in with us as well. How are you?
Good, really good. Thanks for having us on.
Excellent stuff. Right, Jaden, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Jaden McElhenney and I'm from Manor Cunningham. I've been racing since I was really young. I started karting and now I'm in the money. I hope to move into Janetta's cars, which I'm really excited about.
Well, how does a young fellow like you realise that they love racing or get into racing? How did it all start?
We went to Salou for a holiday. I tried rental karts, then I got home and my dad got involved and I loved it straight away. I've been racing ever since.
How good is he, Kelvin?
Yeah, we noticed a talent in him.
Way a wee bit.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We noticed a talent in him kind of early on, Greg. First few races, he was a slow starter, but yeah, progressed towards the front really, really quick. We come from motorsport in our family for two or three generations before us, so we can kind of pick them, whether they're going to be talented or not, you know, from early on. So we've seen a good talent in him, yeah.
And what is that down to? Is it understanding the vehicle, lines breaking, bravery, competitive nature? I think competitive nature is huge, isn't it? You have to want to win.
That's the competitive nature is really, really huge. Look, I think if there's a talent there, they can all be developed. There is a natural talent that has to be there anyway. And then it's just a matter of working on it from there and developing it forward.
So,
you know?
Jaden, like, talk to us about the success you've already had. You're a long way from Salou now, right? So what has been the highlight so far of your young career?
I'm proud of everything I achieved in Kirton, but it's taken a lot of time and hard work, winning races and competing against really talented drivers. I got third in the British Championship, second in the Irish Championship. Last year, I got the IRL plate, which means best driver in my class.
How significant is that, Kelvin? How competitive is this space?
The Irish Kirton scene is ultra competitive. We moved across to the British Championship in 2025. Probably earlier than we should have. It was really his first competitive year. And he finished third in the British Championship, which is really unheard of for some Irish drivers. We almost find it difficult to find anyone in the last maybe 4 or 5 years that have got up that far. There is maybe a few that have won it in the last maybe...
But he's part of a very small club.
Yeah, very, very small club, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And Jaden, you know, obviously it's a sport that you love, but what's most difficult about it?
Probably learning new tracks and making sure I don't make mistakes. Every weekend you have to keep improving.
Right, what's a Ginetta car and what's the ambition to get into them?
Messed up.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Just ask you what the Ginetta car is. Right. Tell them what it's like.
Describe just a Ginetta car.
Ginetta is a car from England. It's a championship.
And is it a cart or is it a car?
It's a car.
Right, and how big is it a deal for you to be moving from a cart into a car?
Really big deal. It's a really big improvement.
Yeah, and it feels obviously it's a completely different feeling, is it?
Yeah, it's definitely a different feeling.
All right, okay. And just in terms of your racing, how hard do you have to practice? How hard do you have to train? What do you have to put into it, Jaden?
I have to train really hard and practice a lot on racing.
But you have to travel, you have to be dead fit as well too. That's all part of it, isn't it? You can't just turn up and...
Yeah, it's physical. Physical. And there's a lot of time away from home. We did 42 weekends away last year from home.
Oh, yeah.
It's massive, you know.
And what would to listeners, Kelvin, what's the... A Ginetta car, if we don't know what it is, but how do we picture it?
Ginetta car is the easiest way to put it. It's a car that has been specifically built for a motorsport purpose.
Yeah.
It's not a real car that has been taken down, you know, a rally car is taken down and made into a motorsport car. This is designed specifically for motorsport.
Yeah.
It's very raw, it's very aggressive. The steering would be very heavy, the brakes would be very heavy, and the gearbox would be very heavy, but it's designed that way. They make them as difficult as possible to drive so that the talent shows through at the early stages. And
cruel world, isn't it?
Cruel world.
Oh, really, but cruel. As you're speaking, I'm just seeing dollar signs flying all over
absolutely
the place. Or euro signs, right? So it's not... Jaden, in terms of the support, family's a big thing for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really big thing.
Mum and Dad help you out. So ahead of a race, okay, there's a lot of pressure on you because we put pressure on ourselves if we're competitive, right? Yeah. How do you, like, do you be nervous before races?
Well, sometimes, like, not that often, though.
Right, now you've raced a lot of tracks already. Have you got a favourite yet?
In Kirton, it's probably Kildarkin.
Right.
And in the Money, it's probably Kirkston.
Right, and what makes a good track? Is it straights? Is it corners? Is it the layout of it?
It's the corners and speed in it.
Yeah, but you've also, your school-going age, of course. Is it tough to keep your mind on school while you're rallying and keep your mind on rallying while you're at school or vice versa?
Well, we kind of do both. We try to keep going in school as good as I can. I do all my work before I get the races done.
Right. Now, what is your dream? Because there's different branches of motorsport, right? There is, you know, rallying huge in this county, of course. Then you've got, you know, the up to Formula One. What would you love to do?
The Ginetta racing.
Yeah, but after that, is that a discipline in and of
there's,
itself?
You have rallying, Calvin. You have GT racing, and then you would have single-seater racing with the open wheels, like F1 cars and the variations of that. At the minute, there's a really huge opportunity out there for GT racers, more so than 22 drivers just on an F1 grid. Everyone's fighting for that spot all over the world, where in the GT racing, there's a lot more classes And there's a bigger opportunity there for a career.
And an easier pathway to the top, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because, look, that's a very elite... F1 is a fine dream, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's a very elite, and as you said, the opportunities... but you can GT race at a very high level and make it work.
Absolutely, yeah, and make a very good career out of it. Yeah.
Exactly, all very exciting. Do you have lots of friends that sort of go to you, Kelvin or Jaden? Sorry, no, they'd love to do it. Is it? Do you think it's something that other young people could get involved in?
Yeah, it does. So if they do get involved, just work hard and all that.
That's what it's all about, hard work?
Yeah.
Practice?
Yeah.
Two ears, one mouth? Do you have to listen a lot?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it's in one ear and out the both, but no, they have to... It's just sad we don't have a lot of young drivers that are involved in karting from Donegal.
It's just hard to access, isn't it? Because I'm sure our go-karting courses, which is kind of the very, very grassroots, they see amazing talents.
Absolutely.
Goes through there. So do you set yourself goals? Have you got goals for this season, Jaden?
Yeah, I'm hoping to do well in the minis and do well in the Ginettas. If I get out again.
And when you're of age, what road car would you like? What would your dream car be? Now, be realistic. Dad's pockets are only so deep.
Like when I'm on the road?
Yeah.
Oh, an MX-5.
Oh, really? Okay, that's not bad. You can pick one
of them.
Pick one of them up, all right. And come here. Have you been behind the wheel of a Ginetta yet, Jaden?
Yes, I have. Yesterday.
Was it like?
It was really good experience, yeah.
And what about on the arms, though, cornering? I mean, you know, it's the car's almost constantly pushing back at you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hard to steer and brake and all.
Yeah, but that's all part of it. And as you said, it's the toughest test for a reason.
Yeah, it's really physical, yeah.
All right, okay. And you were at Blyton Park where you were testing in your Ginetta. What was it like?
Really good experience, yeah, really good.
All right, okay. And what kind of... you know, the guys there see an awful lot of young drivers coming through. Were they able to give you any feedback that you can share with us?
Not really, no, but...
Why? Is it a secret?
Yeah, they were...
What? Yeah. I'm asking him, shut up. No, I'm only messing.
Yeah,
go on.
Okay.
Go on, go on.
They were,
I thought I might have a better chance of getting that him than that.
They were really, really impressed and really... his progress from the start of the day to the end of the day, they were really, really impressed. His listening skills were fantastic, they said.
Excellent.
So moving forward, the outcome was really positive.
And in this in motorsport, Kelvin, is it a case that if you're good enough, you're old enough? Or is it like under this, under 14s, under 16s, under 18s? Or what way does it work?
Sorry, what do you mean by that?
Do you know, like they say, if you're good enough, you're old enough sort of a thing?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
or does he have to go through unders?
You always have to develop up.
Yeah.
It's always a step, right.
And that's designed for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's, all right, brilliant.
As the cars get bigger, they get stronger, so.
Yeah. When's your next race, Jaden?
My next race is next week, I think, in the minis.
Oh, very good.
Ferguson and Saturday, yeah.
Excellent stuff. And against... other young lads or
lads
and girls,
yeah,
obviously.
Was there maybe 7 or 8 cars out the last time we were out there? Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah.
And how long does the race last in the minis generally?
The last circuit we did was Shackleton and Ballykelly. The times are around 5 minutes and you get 8 stages, which is really good.
Cool.
Really, really good.
And are you able to do a lot of the work in the cars yourselves?
Yes.
See,
that's a big
difference maker, isn't it?
Yeah, we found that strange yesterday going to the Ginetta where it's a team and they run the car.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of excluded from that, whereas at home you can maintain your own
stuff. Did you sort of lean over and give any setup advice?
Yeah, I was kindly ushered off to the side. So
you're not the first landed up thinking,
no.
Yeah, I know that. Brilliant stuff. Okay. And when might you be in a Ginetta series? Do you know, Jaden?
When I am 14, should start.
Brilliant. So it's something to look forward to. It's fantastic. How exciting, because, you know, you've always got goals.
Yeah.
And if you've got goals, you know, you're always moving forward.
Yeah.
Well done to you. Jaden's talent started with his dad and uncle, who were the first ever winners of the junior category of the Donegal International Rally.
Yeah, we were.
There you go.
A long time ago.
That comes in from Gary Dock, who's obviously a historian.
Yes, he is. Yes. If you need an answer, you ring Gary, don't you? Yeah.
All right. Brilliant stuff. Anything you want to say, Jaden, or have we covered it all, sunshine?
We covered it all.
Did we? Do you want to say hello to anyone?
No.
Really? You're too cool for school, you. All right, then. Good luck. Good luck next week in the minis. Good luck with the career. be interesting to see. You know, it's very likely in 10 years' time you'll be sitting in here talking about your big first major win. That's literally how it goes. So it's all very exciting for you. And it's lovely for you to watch on too, Kelvin.
It is. It's a nice journey to follow, yeah. It is. All right, really, okay. Really nice, yeah.
Anything you need to mention or have we covered it all?
No, that's kind of just thanks to everyone that supports us and follow them on Facebook, obviously.
Excellent. What's the Facebook page?
Jaden McElhoney Racing.
Simple as. Brilliant. And in this day and age, too, do you do the videos and all, Jaden, or...
Yeah, there's all TikToks and Instagrams and Facebooks, and
it's all part of it now. Yeah,
yeah, all very
important. Not in your day.
Yeah, no, not at all.
With the mobile phones,
just about. It was simpler times.
088.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Jaden McElhenney, well done. Continued success in your career, Jaden, and balancing the school and work. But listen, you've got great guidance, obviously, and your head screwed on, so it's so exciting for you. Well done to you. And Kelvin, thanks so much.
Thanks to you very much for having us on.
Larry Donnelly's law lecturer at Galway University and a political columnist with Journal.ie. Hi, Larry.
Good to be with you, Greg.
Great to have you again. Listen, and I'm not pro-Trump, anti-Trump per se. To be honest, I just watch on. It's another country's business. Or is it? I know we're going to talk about Trump's visit here, but it's a remarkable situation for a president that didn't want to drag the Americans into any messy, long overseas wars. The best he can come out of the Middle East with is a stronger Iran, a richer Iran, and an Iran with control of the Hormuz Strait. Remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I continue to say that this is the biggest mistake he has made as president of the United States. And I would suggest to you that he's made a lot. But this one, first of all, he forfeited one of his biggest political advantages, which was that he would not entangle the United States in needless foreign wars. Second, he totally misapprehended Iran. He thought it could be just like Venezuela, where he took out Maduro, and that was that very quickly. He got duped, in my view, by Netanyahu, and he's furious with him over it. And now, you know, to look at it now, he's faced with a situation where the best case scenario, from his point of view, is going to be worse than when he entered in and the agreement that Barack Obama reached some years ago with Iran, and he tore up. It's going to be worse than that.
He's under political pressure at home. That political pressure could worsen as we head into autumn. And in amongst all of that, he's due to travel to Ireland next month to attend the Irish Open at his golf course at Doonbeg, of course. Do you see any significance to this, or will he just come over for the golf, keep his head down, and go off again?
Well, I mean, by all accounts, he intends to go to Dublin as well as Doonbeg. If it were just a visit to Doonbeg for the Irish Open, then it would be relatively straightforward from a security and logistics point of view, and the focus of the trip would be on golf. But however, he does seem determined to go to Dublin, and when and if he does, things get infinitely more complicated from a political point of view for the Irish government, logistically, and in terms of potential protests, which are easy enough to keep away in Doonbeg, but impossible to keep away in a city like Dublin.
And I suppose, in fairness to the government and their strategy of taking up the invite to the White House in March and you know, choosing words more carefully of late, it makes perhaps, from a diplomatic point of view, this type of a visit less awkward than it potentially could be.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I mean, I do think that golf is going to be the focus for at least the first part of it. But, you know, those who are opposed to this visit, those who say Donald Trump is not welcome here, I'd encourage them to look past that. Presidents, even as big a president as Donald Trump, they come and go. The relationship between Ireland and the United States is a lot bigger than any one person. And I think it's with that spirit that we need to look at this visit, and also with a keen eye on the economy and the fact that our economic model, whether you like it or not, is dependent on U.S. multinational corporations.
And I didn't think it before, but I do think it now. I think sort of this style of politics and an ideology will actually go with Trump.
Yeah, I don't know. In terms of the future, I don't know. It's very hard to know what's going to happen. Was Trump an aberration, a once off, or are we looking at a sustained change? I do think that America in terms of its role in the world. The American people want less of a role in the world. That's why one of the reasons the Iran war doesn't make much sense. So I do think there's something of a reset, but that makes it all the more important for Ireland to engage.
Yeah, all right. Larry, as always, thank you so much. I know there's great demands on your time. I appreciate it. Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at Galway University and political columnist with journal.ie. I'll get to your comments on the traffic tomorrow. Stay tuned for that. That's where we leave it for today, though. Thank you so much for listening or watching the programme.